Pseudopod, episode 137, April 10th, 2009. This week's story, The Reign of the Winter God by Yuji Foster.
This week's Pseudopod is brought to you by Audible. With a library of over 40,000 titles, Audible are offering you a free audiobook download to try them out. So, go to audiblepodcast.com/pseudopod and claim your book now.
Hello, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Alistair, and this week's story comes to us from one of the first writers we ever bought a story from, the magnificent Yuji Foster. It was originally published in The Asylum Volume 3, The Quiet Ward, edited by Victor Heck, and published by Prime Books in 2003. Your narrator this week is Leanne Mabry, one of the most consistently smart, funny, perceptive podcasters I know, to say nothing of being a pretty kick-ass mountain biker and climber. So, wrap up as best you can, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
The Reign of the Winter God by Yuji Foster. The doctors come and ask me questions, but they always ask the wrong questions. So I'm stuck. I can give them the wrong answers, or no answer at all. I try to explain, try to teach them what the right question is, but they never listen. How are you today, Carolyn? They ask. And did you have the nightmares again last night? And occasionally, ready for your medication? The last question I don't mind as much. The round blue pills give delicious sleep. Sleep without dreams. They just make it harder to sleep without them. But the purple pills, the ones with the jagged edges, they make me numb, detached, and that frightens me. I wish they'd ask just once the right question. When? When will the nightmares break through? When will we be devoured by the darkness that lurks? When will we all fall screaming into the frozen pit of hell? Oh yes, I know people think hell is fiery, but I know it's not. Abominable snowman jacking off sleet in your face, while Father Winter shoves his hand up your cunt to the wrist, and his cock like a liquid nitrogen baseball bat up your ass. Air so crisp it shreds your lungs into bleeding crystallized shards when you scream. And your eyeballs frozen open so you can't look away from the razor icicles descending. That's hell. I keep telling them what the right question is, and they keep me locked up in this room with bars over the porthole square in the door, and no other view. Innocent by reason of insanity, I wondered if they'd brand that on my forehead. The people hated me so much, but I was just trying to save them. My children. I knew the cold was coming, knew it by the killing winters we'd been having these last 5 years, knew it by the look in people's eyes. You know the one, when you ask a guy for a buck to help feed your kids and he freezes, becomes like one of those ice statues carved out in the park with chainsaws. Knew it by the voices, cold, cold, cold voices. Raised in anger, without a shred of warmth or compassion. The cold was coming. Was almost here. Like an invisible glacier that had swept unglacially fast into the city. It was smothering us with the cold. The biting, bitter cold. And no one noticed anything wrong. No one except me. I saw what was going to happen. And I did what any mother who loves her children would do. I despaired. Patty with her golden pigtails. She was the oldest, just 5 years old. I didn't want her to suffer the cold. I didn't want her to grow up to open her legs to a passionless man who would use her and abandon her. Oh, my Patty. She loved her mommy. She told me so every day. And there was little Jacob. He was 3, but such a clever 3-year-old. His shiny blue eyes, the same blue as his father's, the man who warmed me at marriage's altar, who shot his heat into my womb on the day the furnace broke down, and then left me for a Nordic bitch with breasts of snow. Jacob's father thought I was too fiery, too hot, too passionate. He didn't see that we needed to stoke our fires, not smother them. Now he shoves his cock into an ice goddess's freezing slit. And Tammy, the baby. She emerged in a wave of scalding blood from my belly, torn out by a blistering scalpel. I knew it was a baptism of fire for me and her. I had such hopes for her until the cold came. I felt it announce itself. Autumn days so cold your fingers turned blue and your breath not only misted but froze and fell tinkling to the sidewalk. Spring nights so chilly all the blankets in the house piled on the creaking bed weren't enough to keep your muscles from clenching, agonized cramping from the cold. And with winter snow and sub-zero temperatures, 2 degrees not counting wind chill, an infinity below with, came the looks. The landlord and his polar stare when I couldn't make rent, and his contemptuous sneer even as he collapsed panting between my thighs. The pinched, dispassionate faces of the women behind the welfare desks. "No," they rapped out, their words like bullets. "You can't get an advance on your check to pay the gas bill." And their eyes, the accusation. "You whore with your children so many, your womb should be sealed up, frozen off." My children, my darling little ones, the world is cruel and heartless and cold. I condemned you to it with my passion and love. I hadn't thought I could do so much wrong by feeding the fire. But I was wrong. You would never be warm in this world. So I set you free. How they cried, my children, when I doused them with the last of the kerosene. It stung their eyes. I should have covered them. But the match made it all better. Such a glorious, magnificent fire. I was warm again, warmed from my children's love, warmed as I freed them from the sins and the disappointments of this world. I held my hands out to the blaze. I wanted to hold them to me, to hug their little bodies and bask in their heat. But they fought me off. I guess they were selfish. They didn't want to share. After all, they were only children. But the warmth didn't last. The firemen came bringing flinty-eyed policemen and the landlord. The smoke alarm, the only thing that worked right in the low-income tenement hole they wanted me to call home, had alerted them. They put out the fire. But that's okay. My children were gone, safe in the arms of a loving God. And so I ended up here, with the doctors and their shivery stethoscopes and wrong questions, and the warden guards with their spittle and their fingers on my breasts when the doctors weren't looking. The winter god is mad at me for saving my children. And he punishes me with his servants and with nightmares. He's coming, you know, tonight. Last night in my dreams, he told me so as he flayed the skin of my back with his lash. Each glassy strand tipped with barbs of ice so they froze my flesh as they peeled it from my bones. But even with my blood jellied on the chill slab beneath us, I still asked him the right question. "When?" I demanded. And he replied, "Tomorrow." The screams are beginning. I can't see much from my barred window, but I saw the shadows rise. The temperature drops. The heat bleeds away, leaving goose flesh pricks on my arms. Down 3 cells, Mad Mary, who staved in her husband's skull with an ice pick and ate his brains, began to shriek. The winter god is toying with her. Her screams become high-pitched and frantic. He's tonguing her, maybe, scouring his ice-toothed mouth over her body. Maybe she likes it. The winter god emerges. He displays himself to me, framed in the sea hole of my door. I know I can't run away. Mad Mary's legs are wrapped around his waist as I can tell her skin is sealed to him. He impaled her and is towing her around by her frozen cunt. She continues to scream higher and higher. The slut's enjoying it. I can tell. And just as I think I'm never going to be able to hear anything else but her screams ever. She freezes solid. Starting from her fingers and her toes, the ice crystals form around her, encasing her body until it's a rock-hard sheet of frost. The winter god slides her off his cock before her slit locks shut and lets her fall, thump, to the ground. He grins at me, not afraid of my burning hate. The pointy purple pills have blunted my only weapon. My fire's all gone. The guards come running. I scream at them to flee while they still can. I should have saved my breath. They're his creatures already. They prostrate themselves before him, and one by one, he breathes out a blessing of arctic wind over them. The warden soldier who hates me most, his ropey strands of saliva in my food and my hair. He skulks forward, and the winter god hammers an icy fist into his chest. Ribs shatter, and viscera seep out into a slush of red and black. The man screams, sharp and ecstatic, until the winter god grips his heart. I hear the crackle of blood crystallizing. He's calm then, with his white skin and blue lips, like the worst sort of a late-night movie zombie. He shambles up and unlocks my door. I shrink back, but it's a small room. My innocent by reason of insanity, not a prison cell. There's no place to hide. Behind him, I see the other worshippers of the winter god rise up. They all have their bludgeons out, hard sticks like wooden phalluses ready to bash and violate. They drag me from the cot I've crawled under, their brutal fingers digging into my ankles. Foreplay for the winter god. Something to whet his appetite. They throw me to the middle of the room and use their stick penises to punish me. They know how to make it hurt. The blows thudding into my back and my legs like an avalanche of abuse, bearing me, so even my shrieks are muffled by the crack of wood against flesh and bone. I hope they kill me. I want to be with my children. But the winter god is not merciful. The men cease their titillation and make way for him as he fills the doorway. He laughs at me in a gale of frigid air. My hair turns brittle, the trace of humidity in the air sealing around each strand in a sheath of crackling snow. Face frozen, eyelashes sharp as pins. I can do nothing but whimper, gibbering with fear. The purple pill shows me the way. Even as he rips my psycho ward paper clothes away, the pills are extinguishing the last embers of me. When he spears my womb with his serrated cock, I'm ready for him. I embrace him, screaming like Mad Mary screamed, feeling his thickness sliding into me. Goodbye, my children. I am glad, at least, that I saved you from this. The winter god feels the change in me. He jabs his tongue between my lips, and I suck on it like a popsicle. Even with the skin on my lips, on my tongue is torn away, and the blood crusts into spiky blood ice. I'm sorry, I cry, my lips so cold, so raw I can barely mouth the words. I killed my children, and it was wrong. It was wrong to put them in the fire. It was evil. The winter god is pleased. He tears me, plunging his frozen metal phallus deeper into me, pierces through my womb and into my stomach, moving into a clenching spasm through my heart. I am possessed completely by the winter god, my back rigid, held straight by the shaft of ice. Yours. I belong to you, I scream. I am ice. I belong to you. And the winter god encases me with cold, like he did Mad Mary. And it's his approval, his holy favor. He pulls out of me and blasts his climax of hail over my naked body in a river of frost. And it bounces over me, flows into me, and we are one. The winter god and me. Now I've converted, become a creature of the ice. They're letting me out of my room. Not out into the world yet, no. The Winter God doesn't trust me enough for that. But they're letting me sit in the sunless courtyard where the grass is brown and brittle and the trees are blackened skeletons. The winter breeze kisses the back of my neck like a lover. And my fingers are white with cold. But I like it. I love the cold. Snowflakes are falling. When they touch my skin, they don't melt. They linger like a patina of diamonds. The Winter God showers me with jewels. I heard the radio at the nurse's station say there's a blizzard on its way. A winter storm. But they're wrong. It's already here.
Every 10 years or so, the Isle of Man is buried. It has what I referred to in my German oral as a maritime klima, or maritime climate, or it rains and is windy an awful lot, depending on your point of view. Either way, the end result is that the weather varies from sunny to why is the sky god angry with us, and not very much on either side. Apart from every 10 years or so, when a snowstorm, the likes of which I have never seen anywhere else, covers the island in a blanket of white. The upper houses are snowed in, roads close, and a lot of teenagers have a lot of fun sliding down the hills on everything from sledges to car bonnets. When I was there, I loved it. Firstly, because it was snow, and therefore both literally and metaphorically cool, and secondly, because any day off school was a good day, and thirdly, because the post-toboggan party I went to one year was one of the very, very few near misses on an otherwise deeply, relentlessly, hilariously single teenage existence. I seriously considered going into the priesthood. Seriously, that's how bad it got. For me, the Dawson's Creek-style wildly varied romances always happened just down the road. That being said, that party did lead to the only John Hughes moment I've ever legitimately had, but I'm getting off the point. About 16 years out from that particular party, I've come to realise that the snow, the winter itself, that isn't the point. The point is what comes after. That moment where the snow melts, and the whole world is clean like someone's polished it. It's beautiful, it's spring cleaning in the most literal sense. The winter is necessary, of course, but what defines it, oddly, is its absence. When you focus on one, whether it's the heat of summer or the cold of winter, that's when things get dangerous, when the natural order breaks and you find yourself out of season in the worst possible way. But when you balance them, that's magnificent. Pseudopod relies on you to pay our authors and cover our costs, so if you like this story, and I have to say it's one of my new favourites, then please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. I promise you won't regret it. The car is inextricably linked to us at almost every level of society, a means of communication as much as a means of transport. But what happens when that communication breaks down? Road rage, a phenomenon that lends its name to this pair of stories from two all-time greats and one author who is well on his way to that status. Richard Matheson's Duel is one of those elemental stories that feels so complete, so pure, it's impossible to imagine anyone else writing it. Man, a salesman driving across the country, enters into an escalating war with a truck driver that starts off as nothing more than simple one-upmanship and culminates in man's personality being stripped away until all he is an engine, driving his car forward to the next battle. It's a simple, pared-down and unbelievably powerful piece, and was adapted into a film by then-newcomer Steven Spielberg. It also inspired Throttle, written by the father and son team of Stephen King and Joe Hill. Here, the trucker is the hero, battling a tribe of motorcycle outlaws on the loneliest road in the country. As pure and elemental and savage as the story that inspired it, it's a stripped-back, lean piece of writing that will haunt you. Road Rage collects two stories from three of the best authors in the field. If you are remotely interested in horror, then this is for you. It's really that simple. Road Rage is available from Audible now, along with over 40,000 other titles, so if you want to claim it as your free audiobook, or want to pick one of those instead, just go to audiblepodcast.com/pseudopod. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated, and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. And Pseudopod thinks what we really need is better metal.